I'm happy to say that I'm having a reasonable midlife crisis. You know, I buy records and I bought a tube amp. I'm not going to drive it into a wall. You know, I'm not going to get in trouble for fucking it. But it was weird. What sort of inspired it is I had these records, and there weren't even that many records. There's about 300 records that I had, and I had them since high school. And I don't know. I mean, I'm 49, so like when you go through the records that you stop buying them at some point, right around when CDs came out. I don't even know when that was, in the late 80s maybe. But you can go through your whole life with these records that you have. Like I could see, like, okay, I was trying to, you know, relate to the townies I grew up with. Here's us. Some Skinner, some Bad Company, had to do that. And then at some point, you know, like, oh, that's where I met the guy in college. All right, so then all of a sudden, like, there's a lot of Bowie and some Eno and some Fripp. And then there's like, oh, there's college, there's OMD. And I was a little confused. And I go through a little gray area there with who you were. And then you sort of move into jazz and other stuff. But I got this tube amp. The story of the tube amp is essentially, you know, tube amp is what you play records to if you want it to be pure. You know, pure tube sound, just like from the record to the speaker, no fucking with it. So I interviewed Jack White, not dropping names, it happened. So I interviewed Jack White, and I go down to his place, right? And in his studio office, he's got a wall of Macintosh tube amps. All right, these are the best, American made, beautiful, right? And I've always been fascinated with them. And I'm like, he's got like 15 of them. So in my mind, I'm like, if he's got 15, I could afford one, right? So I get back to LA and I immediately go price Macintosh amps. I go into one place and I'm like, that's the one I want. I said, Jack White has those, man. How much is that one? The guy goes, $14,000. And look, I could have put it on my credit card, but look, but the truth of the matter is, if you don't have $14,000 to comfortably throw away on a fucking tube amp, there's no way you're gonna enjoy music through that thing. If I would have bought that thing, every record I put on, I'd be sitting there going, nah, this doesn't sound like $14,000. Maybe I'd move this knob. No, it still doesn't sound like $14,000. And then eventually he'd go over to some other guy's house and he just had a cheap setup and he'd listen to the same record and it'd sound perfect. And he'd just sit there going, I'm a fucking idiot. So I found a more reasonably priced tube amp. And then I decided, now that I'm back into records, this has been hanging over me since high school. I'm like, I've got to understand Beefheart. Now, like, okay, some of you are going to get this shit. Captain Beefheart has been hanging over me. Like this weird, you know, cryptic, you know, like, I will never be smart enough or large enough of mind to assess and understand Captain Beefheart. Like, it's just been hanging there. But as soon as I started getting into records, I was like, I got to fucking understand Beefheart. And the day came where I bought my stuff. And, okay, it was a Sunday morning. My girlfriend was hungover. And I remember this well because, like, there's a couple things I could do. My girlfriend's hungover. Generally, it would be to reprimand her and wake up and go, you don't feel good, right? Well, maybe you shouldn't have drank and made a fool out of yourself and me. Wouldn't that have been a good thing if you didn't fucking do that? And, you know, just keep pushing until she cried. Because I don't really know if someone loves me if I can't make them cry. So, isn't that the test for all of us, really? If you're with somebody and you don't know if you can make them cry, I'd really go deeper. Wouldn't trust that bond. But I made a different choice that morning. I went with, hey, baby, you feel shitty? Look, you want me to go get you a breakfast burrito? So that was how I treated it. But I knew that the record store was right next to the breakfast burrito place. All right? So I go to Atwater Village, and I go to the burrito place. And I go up, and there's a Latino guy there, which I expected. I'm not racist, but I was like, oh, yeah, of course you're here. So I order the burrito from him, and then I go three doors down to the record store. And I must have, I was almost in like a panic. You know, I just walk into this record store. It was only open for like 10 minutes. I just barge in. I'm like, Beefheart. Do you have doors to Beefheart? And the guy in there, it was almost as if he was expecting me. He's like, yep. And like... And he walks me over to this bin, and I'm like, which one? Save his milk. All right, this is the one? All right, good. And as I'm walking out, like, I see there's a sealed Kraftwerk album. And I'm like, well, I'm still kind of gay. So, like, I get that. So I got Kraftwerk, and I got Beefheart, and I purchase it. And I go back to the burrito place. I timed it right to pick up her burrito. You know, and I'm waiting online. I got my records, and there's some big old weird-looking dude behind me. And I approach the Latino kid, and he's like, he says, "What'd you get?" And I'm like, "You wouldn't understand." That's what I'm doing in my mind. So I go, "I got Captain Beefheart." He's like, "Oh, really? Which one?" And I'm like, "Safe as milk." He's like, "That's a good start." I'm like, "Who the fuck are you?" You know. And then it just became this pocket of weirdness, because like I was like, all right, so he's onto it, you know? How am I? And then like I turn around to walk out, and the guy behind me is this large, kind of looks like, you know, he looks like the dude that like he lived through the '60s and, you know, survived it. He had heard the exchange with the Latino guy, and then as I'm walking out, I hear him right here to the side of my head go, "Trying to catch up, huh?" It was like, to me, it didn't even come off as an insult. Like, I walked right by him, and I'm like, that is all I'm doing. I mean, I think in every aspect of my life, that is all I'm doing. So then I thought, like, that was the Buddha. That guy was the Buddha. And I so wanted to go back and have him not be there and then ask the Latino guy, "Where's that guy that was behind me?" And have the Latino guy go, "There was no one behind you." Sat over there and I looked at the audience. I'm like, oh, they look good. Yeah, I judge everything. I judge all the time. I'm a great judger. I have shitty judgment, but I'm a great judger. I'll judge the fuck out of almost everything. I fucking love it. I'll own it. I hate when people say, "Hey, don't judge," because I'm like, fuck you. Don't take away my hobbies. I mean, if there is a God, why should he have all the fun? I love to fucking judge. What does that even mean, don't judge? What does the resting human brain do other than go, what the fuck is that guy? I mean, what are you gonna do? I mean, there's eating, there's like, oh, I'm working now, and like, oh, that guy's an idiot. That's all there is. And then fucking, but you're usually judging at least for a few minutes during that, till you lose yourself, and then you think you're a hero of some kind. But I don't even know what that meant. But I think it makes sense. But the point is, I learned a lesson about judgment. There's a story that I want to tell, because I think it's an important story to tell. I'm at a hotel in Montreal. All that's happening in this story is I'm walking towards an elevator. That's it. I'm walking towards an elevator. There's a guy in front of me about 20 feet walking towards the elevator. He's wearing shorts. That's all that's happening. Now, I don't know what's going on with me that day. I'm sure there's something on my mind. But I do know that when I looked up and noticed that guy, my brain went, fuck those shorts. But that angry, that, I mean, immediately, like, who the fuck? What kind of fucking idiot? Like, I was that hostile. Now, we've all had that happen. You see somebody you don't know dressed a certain way, and you're just walking down the street, and you're like, oh, fuck you. Now your weird attempt at self is cluttering my fucking brain. Like, what are you trying to present me here? What era are you going for? Where are we? I mean, is that a real beard? Is that a coffee shop beard? Is that the Jews run the government, I should have an outhouse beard? What are you trying to do? Do you need those glasses? Are you just a glasses delivery system? Anyways, you get what I'm saying. And I've made bad choices in that area. I've been on the other side of that. There is footage of me on Conan O'Brien, 1992, sitting confidently beside him, wearing black leather pants and a black velvet Nehru jacket. That exists in the world. I left my house thinking that was a good idea, that I could transcend that outfit in a non-ironic way and be funny. What the fuck was I thinking? I mean, did I leave my house thinking like, I'm Bono, you know, I can do this. All right, back to the elevator. So by the time I get to the elevator, I'm seething with anger at that guy's pants choice. Literally like, you're a fucking idiot. People wouldn't even wear those shorts on vacation. You're so, how the fuck could you, like, I was so furious. I was seething, right? And I hadn't even seen him from the front yet. We get on the elevator, he turns around and he's got a scar that starts on the center of his forehead and goes all the way around his skull. My only thought in that moment was, oh, you can wear them. But I don't even, what does that even mean? Like, what went through my mind? Like, let's do like a montage, right? First shot, he turns around. My thought, what happened to your head, man? Right? Second thought was probably, that must have been touch and go for at least an afternoon. know, concerned family wandering the hospital hallways, the whole bit. Then the third thought must have been like, well, you've earned the right to pretty much wear whatever you want, pal. And I guess the final thought was, I'm going to give you a pass today. Because I'm the king of this elevator. And you're my guest. What floor would you like? I'm not an alpha guy. I just want to put that out there. Like, I think I act like an alpha guy, but I don't think I am an alpha male. And I know that because when I lock eyes with a real alpha male, they know. I can read their face. There's that moment they're like, say hi to the little girl in there. I'm like, oh, fuck, they saw you. They saw you. Walk away. Just going to want to talk about sports. Walk away. You don't want to. I'm going to bring up extreme wanking. You know? But yeah, I'm not that guy. I'm not a sports guy. I mean, I just wasn't brought up believing in it. And but there's still part of me, it's weird, I'm 49, there's still part of me that if I see like four high school guys wearing varsity jackets, there's still part of my brain that thinks, oh fuck, be cool, just be cool. I'm not even on their radar. I mean, like, unless it's for one of them to say, why is that old guy acting weird? You know, and in my brain, I'm like, leave me alone, I'm just going to my locker. But okay, let's get to sports. I'm not a sports guy for a very specific reason. I also think I'm a comedian for a very specific reason. And it has to do with my parents, because they can go fuck themselves. Look, if your parents ever sent you to more than one summer camp in the summer, it wasn't about you having a good time. They wanted you out of the house. They didn't want to deal with you anymore. And they'll try to push it off on you, like, you need to learn new things. They're like, when is a Jewish kid going to need to ride a horse? Seriously, when am I going to need to ride a horse? What situation will I ever be in where I'm like, thank God I went to that camp where they all made fun of me because I can ride this horse right out of here. My mother also found me a guitar teacher that was a guy who was married. There was these two Christian hippies, little chubby Christian hippies, and they would come, they would pick me up at school, they would take me to swim practice, they would take me out to dinner, and then they'd take me home to their house and teach me guitar. And my mother would say, how was your guitar lesson? And I would say, with my other parents, it was fine. My mother is a professional anorexic, and I say that because it's her job. It's not a sickness. She manages it. If you were to ask my mother, what do you do for a hobby? She would say, I maintain a weight of 116 pounds. And you would say, that's your life? Yes, that's all my life goes into that. So that's my mom. I thought it'd be funnier. But I, because this next part really needs a buffer. I think for the first 9 years of my life, I was a fat kid. And I really believe my mother just saw me as some sort of weird extension of her fat. And I think that she thought if she could just stop eating, that maybe the kid would disappear. Oh. I can't frame that any funnier. But just saying at that time made me hurt a little bit. Let's get to the funny part. At some point, my mother decided maybe we should put Fat Mark. She didn't refer to me that way out loud. But I could see it. I think Fat Mark should be on Pee Wee Little League. I showed no interest in sports. I didn't care about sports. I was not guided that way. I never played catch with my dad because playing catch with my dad would have been like throwing the ball away. All right. So she puts Fat Mark on Pee Wee Little League. All right, now when you're fat and you're on Pee Wee Little League, you're in the outfield because no one's going to hit that far. And if it does get out that far, it's going to hit the ground. It's going to just be bouncing. It's not a big deal. So Fat Mark is out in center field. Got a fat left fielder, got the fat right fielder. We're just out there being fat. We're the fat outfield. All right, maybe a little chatter, hitting the glove a little bit. Hey, bada bada, what does this even mean? Why are we saying this like this? You know, maybe a little chit-chat with the other guy. Hey, you gonna get a Snickers or a snow cone after? I'm probably gonna get both. I'm gonna get a rainbow snow cone and try to eat it before it turns purple. All right. And look, I got to be honest with you. I was not prone. You know, I'm fairly athletic. I could probably pull it up. But I was afraid of the ball, man. But, like, at that time, like, you know, batting is how I would bat. Catching. But this was me in the picture. All right, so here's what happens. And this was a life-changing event. We're going to try and work through this. I've made a promise to myself to work through this. I'm out there in center field, just being fat. We're having our time out there. All right, we're just kicking the dirt around. And then I heard that sound. It's an unmistakable sound. Everyone knows that sound. It was the crack of a bat. And my first reaction was to look at the other guy. And then I look over at that guy, and he's pointing at the air. And there's a ball just suspended in the air coming towards Fat Mark. The coach is saying, get under it, get under it. And I'm backing up, and I know this is like, you know, it's right there. And then in my memory, there's a sprinkler, all right? There, my heel caught on a sprinkler. I'm pretty sure it was there, all right? I can't be sure. It might just be something I put in there to, you know, buffer the shame of what's going to happen next, which is me falling backwards onto the ground and the ball bouncing off of my face. So I was under it. I got that part of the equation correct. Now, in my mind, at that point, the coach is yelling, get up, you fat fuck! Field it, fatty! Come on! Now, that's obviously revisionism. I don't think a coach would talk that way to a fat kid, right? I probably made that up to make the shame worse. So now it's not really a ball game as much as it is a fat kid crying. Which on some level in my mind is like, well, it was all about me for that time. It would have been a better moment to be like, I caught it. But like, yeah, that's all right. Like on some level, if you're that self-absorbed and you want to be the center of attention, it succeeded in that way. But see, I really think though, this is my point. I think if I would have caught that ball, I would have been a different person. I don't think I would be up here talking to you. I think I would have been a well-adjusted person. I would have felt that feeling of esteem and maybe gone on to play more sports. Perhaps I would have, you know, now been at a pretty good job with a family and I had, you know, guy friends that I would say things like, you know, good talk, bro. You know? Like it could have been a whole different life for me if I just caught that ball. And I some part of me needs closure. So if you don't mind, I want to go through a psychodrama here where I'm going to walk Fat Mark off the field. I'm going to walk Fat Mark off and just try to give him a heads up, which is a term he didn't understand at this point. Just try to, you know, give him a heads up of what's going to happen. So let's go there now. I'm going to try to coach little Fat Mark. Here we go. Wow, that was ridiculous, what just happened. You were so close. You almost had that. All right? It's okay, though. It's okay. Look, there's a couple things I need to tell you about what's going to happen for you. First of all, there's no going back to the dugout. This shit is done. There's no more putting yourself in the position to be physically hurt. From here on out, it's all going to be thinky pain. What else can I tell you? Teamwork, that's done. No more of that. No reason to believe in that shit. And quite honestly, from here on out, no sports heroes. Not that you had them to begin with, but here on out, just loners, fragmented people, drug addicts, people who live on the margins, comedians, rock stars. Those are your people. Get used to it. And also, I guess I can tell you quite honestly, it doesn't get much better after this. On many different levels in your life, metaphorically, this situation will play out over and over again. You're going to be very close to catching it, and then you will just end up crying. What else can I tell you about the immediate situation? Okay, you're going to get off the field. Your mom's going to take you to Dairy Queen. She's going to let you eat a banana split. You're going to enjoy that. And an hour later, she's going to make you feel guilty about eating it. So that's going to happen. So quite honestly, she's out too after this. You know, they're both out. Mom and dad are done. What else is going to happen? Well, about 14, you start smoking cigarettes, which are really cool. But at 39, when you can't breathe, not so cool. Cocaine's going to come into play about 15 years old. You'll commit to that for about 9 years of your adult life, which will also be very exciting, but a mistake. I don't know how can I sum this up? Okay, it's going to take a lifetime to walk this off. And you can quit crying now on the outside. And I think the big payoff is that eventually, you know, because of this moment that you had on this field, and holy shit, let me just look around for a minute. No sprinkler. Because of this moment here, you're going to find yourself at age 49 on a stage in a basement in New York City in front of a room full of strangers taping a special with no end to this story, really. No end.
So if you'd only caught that ball, you would have a little closure on this bit. Thank you.
All right. There's something to be said about doing a lot of drugs at some point in your life. I personally don't have a lot of respect for people that don't have the courage to lose complete control of their life for a few years. Right down the fucking hole. You know, like, what happened? I don't know. It's time I'm not getting back. I'd like to think I did some good writing, but there's no real evidence of it. That's random pieces of paper and something I have finished, but I was in it, you know. But there is something to be learned from drug experiences, especially if you go out there, right, bro? Yeah. So, well, the point is, I went and ate this Chinese food the other night, and it seems disconnected. But I went to this Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, and there was like, I'm not a big Chinese food guy, but this was like this, you know, kind of nouveau, cool Chinese place, and I ate pastrami kung pao. That's crazy, right? Just chunks of fatty meat with, you know, salt and more salted things. And then there was the I think it was just called lamb fat curry, which was just lamb fat and curry and some other vegetables. And then there was these tiki pork bellies. I'm not sure when it became okay to eat that shit, but I mean, because it's not even baked. I think, didn't they used to throw that part away, pork belly? But now it's like, this is great. So there were these two pieces of pork belly that were just, I don't even know if they were deep fried or what. They were chopsticks, and they were squares, and there was no way to eat them other than pick them up and just bite them, and they were just sort of warm, gelled fat with crispy outsides. The point I'm making is, I ate all this shit. And I got in the car with my friend Jack, and I'm sitting there, and my hand went numb. Like, literally 20 minutes after I ate that, I'm like, my hand's tingling, I can't feel it. But because of my drug experience, I'm like, I'm just gonna ride it out. You know what I mean? It's probably gonna go away if it does, and like, maybe my whole right side will go numb, and I'll be talking like this, but right now, we'll see what happens. And I wouldn't have had that wisdom without years of laying in bed on coke, going, please, not now, not now. Let's ride this out. I am still alive. That's amazing. It's all amazing. I spend a lot of time in hotels. I do. It's just part of the job. It's just part of my life. And I don't mind it. I got nothing to complain about. I mean, I got to wake up early sometimes to enter a morning zoo format. I have to get up to do morning zoo radio. As many of you know, in every great city or lesser city in this country, there's a morning zoo situation happening. And comics sometimes have to enter that situation and play along to sell tickets. Now, as many of you know, a morning zoo format, traditionally, there is a main guy, a laughing guy, and a baffled and shocked woman. That's the classic setup, give or take the woman or the laughing guy. If I were to do an impression of that, that was just sounds, it would be, bah, 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 bah. Oh, fellas. So I have to deal with that. Now, in this particular story, I'm in Cleveland at a hotel. I get up at 5:30, which quite honestly is bullshit for anybody. 5:30 is bullshit. I mean, is it night? Is it fucking day? What the fuck is 5:30? I don't care who you are, whether you have to wake up for it or you've been up all night for 5:30, it's bullshit. Of course, if you've been up all night for 5:30, you have other problems. Usually, if you see the sun come up at 5:30, you're saying something like, fuck, should we call the guy? You know, no, dude, we ran out at the right time. Fuck you, I need a bump for work. No, fuck you. You got a drug problem. You're gonna tell me I have a fucking drug problem in my apartment, asshole? Yeah, you do. We don't need more blow. Fuck you. I just listened to you talk about your guitar for 4 hours. And you're gonna tell me that I can't have another fucking bump? Get the fuck out of my apartment. Sorry, flashback. So I wake up at 5:30 to do morning radio, and I realize I forgot my toothbrush. So then there's this dialogue that happens in my head, like, one part of me is like, you fucking idiot, you're a professional traveler, how could you forget your toothbrush, stupid? And then the other part of me is like, hey, take it easy on us, you know, it happens, you know? And then the other guy's like, fuck you, take it easy, it's your fault, asshole. And then a voice I don't know goes, oh, fellas. And then I realize, holy shit, I can just call the front desk of the hotel And you can ask them for a toothbrush, and they will give you like half a toothbrush. Like not even a real toothbrush, like this. You get it, and you're like, why did they even bother making these? So I call the front desk, and no one answers the phone. That's a lonely feeling. Right? Why isn't someone answering? There's always supposed to be someone at the front desk of the hotel. Why aren't they answering? That's weird. What was weirder was my first thought when no one answered. My first real thought was, oh, fuck, zombies. And it wasn't even a fake thought. It was a real fear in that moment. I don't know what that says about us as a culture, that my first real fear was, oh, fuck, zombies. But I know it was genuine because there were thoughts that followed. The thought that followed that was, how many more are left like me? Should I be stockpiling food? Do I need a weapon? These were practical questions. And then I remember like getting exasperated and taking a deep breath and thinking, I'm not prepared to lead. Like, I really hope there's an alpha male out there with a rudimentary sense of tribalism that can lead me and a frightened multi-ethnic crew of people through this post-apocalyptic zombie landscape where I'm fucking food. I mean, I'm food in 20 minutes if that guy's not fucking out there, you know? And then the woman picks up, so like, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Can I help you? And I go, what is going on down there? And she said, excuse me? I'm like, why didn't you answer? We're in trouble. And she said, what's the matter, sir? Can I help you? I'm like, I need a fucking toothbrush. And she said, there's no reason for that language. I'll send one up. I'm like, no zombies. And then, like, I realized I just said that out loud to a person and that maybe I should clear something up. So I caught myself, and I thought this would take care of it. I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. I got to do radio. Like, that should make it understandable to someone who has no idea who I am or my life. So I'm sure she hung up and said, there's someone on meth upstairs. But that doesn't really add up because he asked for a toothbrush. Are you guys married? Yeah? Do you remember the first vacation? Horrifying, wasn't it? Did you do all right? You did all right? See, my whole thing was like, look, we have this system at home where like, okay, we're playing pieces on this board that we understand. You have a sort of weird kind of petty interactions that you get very predictable and you're like, okay, I'm gonna say this, she's gonna do that. I hope she doesn't like threaten to leave now. You know, that kind of stuff. So we didn't know where to go and a lot of people were suggesting Cuba, which I didn't understand. What the fuck is wrong with hipsters? Like, yeah, you gotta go to Cuba. I'm like, why do I need to go to Cuba? Because they're going to let capitalism in. It's going to change. So you're saying I should go appreciate the charm of a failed communist dictatorship? You want me to go experience that before the people actually have a sense of self and pride or whatever? Well, maybe that's not what capitalism will bring, but you get what I'm saying. They make the cigars right there. Look, I can be miserable and smoke a cigar anywhere. I don't have to go to the source of the cigars to do that. Some people are like, you should go to Kauai. There's nothing there. Right? That's what people say. It's like, it's great. It's in Hawaii. There's nothing there. That's a selling point. Really? Nothing there? Yeah, it's great. There's nothing there. And then you go, and within 3 days, you're like, there's fucking nothing here. So I don't know if you know anything about Kauai, but there are thousands of roosters. There are thousands of roosters. Real, full-on fucking roosters. Not little roosters, the kind you see twice in a lifetime. Because the bottom line is, there was nothing in Kauai, right? Portuguese ships would come and leave animals. There was nothing to eat them. So now you got an explosion of roosters. The first time you see that many roosters, you're like, this is a sign of something bad. But then you're like, no, there's just a lot of roosters here. Thousands of them. And by day three, you're like, all right, you're used to it. But then you realize, fuck, none of them know what time it is. You know? It's like all day long. And you're like, it's fucking 3:30. What is this bullshit? Is this what freedom does? They're just out there like, I don't work for the man. I just woke up. Fuck you. You're on my schedule, tourist. And it's weird, I had a very poetic moment with a chicken, or a rooster, not a chicken, in Kauai. I had a very powerful moment with a rooster, and I'll share it with you. It's weird, when I said that line in North Carolina, that line, I had a powerful moment with a rooster, there was a dude in the audience who went, yep. And like, in my mind, it was like, his story's gotta be better than mine. Because I just pictured a dude like, yeah, I was like in seventh grade, I was horny, you know, and I thought I could wrangle it, and it was like weird, and that's why I have one ball. But I had a poetic moment with a rooster, and I'll explain it to you. I was just on the balcony in Hawaii, and I was looking at the roosters, just me looking at roosters, and one of them had a fucked up leg, but he didn't know he had a fucked up leg. He's a stupid rooster. Now, you know, these roosters are big. I have to assume that's where the word cocky came from. Roosters are pretty dramatic, you know, intense looking things. This guy has a fucked up leg, but he doesn't know it, so he thinks he's still getting over, you know? So he's sort of like, oh yeah, look at me. Fuck yeah. Who wants a piece of this, you know? And I'm just assuming all the chickens are like, no, that guy's got a funny frequency. I'm not gonna fuck that guy. It's probably congenital, and I don't want my kids to walk like that. But he doesn't know that. They're thinking like, oh no, I'm gonna fucking invest my eggs in that fucking freak. Come on, baby. Who wants a piece of this? So I'm projecting all this onto the situation. In my mind, I'm like, you know, we're a lot alike, you and me, crippled rooster.